Translation. Sri Sukadev Goswami said to Maharaj Parikshit, "The Supreme Personality of Godhead Hari, after being seen in his transcendental form, instructing Brahmaji, the leader of the living entities." Purport. In this verse, it is clearly mentioned that the Lord is Ajana, or the Supreme Person, and that he was showing his transcendental form, Atmanarupam, to Brahmaji while instructing him in the summarization of Srimad Bhagavatam in 4 verses. He is Ajana, or the Supreme Person, amongst Jananam, or all persons. All living entities are individual persons, and amongst all such persons, Lord Hari is supreme, as confirmed in the Shruti Mantra, Nityo Nityanam Chetanas Chetananam. So there is no place for impersonal features in the transcendental world as there are impersonal features in the material world. Whenever there is Chetana, or knowledge, the personal feature comes in. In the spiritual world, everything is full of knowledge, and therefore everything in the transcendent world, the land, the water, the tree, the mountain, the river, the man, the animal, the bird, everything is of the same quality, namely Chetana, and therefore everything there is individual and personal. Srimad Bhagavatam gives us this information as the supreme Vedic literature, and it was personally instructed by the Supreme Personality of God to Brahmaji, so that the leader or the living entities might broadcast the message to all in the universe in order to teach the supreme knowledge of Bhakti Yoga. Brahmaji in this turn instructed Narada, his beloved son, the same message of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Narada in his turn taught the same to Vyasadev, who again taught it to Shukadev Goswami. Through Shukadev Goswami's grace and by the mercy of Maharaj Parikshit, we are all given Srimad Bhagavatam, perpetually to learn the science of the Absolute Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Gyananjana Salakayam Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prestaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Miti Namine. Namaste Sarasvate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna. So before I start, I would like to seek the blessings of all the senior Vaishnavas present here in the temple room and those which are online. Please bestow your blessings so I can say something relevant, practical, applicable, useful, and something which you can all use for preaching purposes. Please accept my humble obeisances. Vancha kalpa turupyascha kripa sindhu bhya evacha patitanam pavinebhyo vaishnavabhyo namo namaha. Anantakoti Vaishnava Vrindaki. Hare Krishna. So we're kind of entering a different section of Srimad Bhagavatam. Here we can see in the verse 38, we're basically starting a section of speaking. Shukadev Goswami is starting to speak. Basically in Chaturshloki, the Supreme Personality of God had instructed Brahma, and this sort of encapsulates and finishes this pastime. Now, a new pastime is opening up where Brahmaji accepted the instruction, and as acceptance of his instruction, what happens now? He starts act upon those instructions. He understands them, and he tries to apply them as a right disciple, as a correct shishya has to do. It's interesting, when I was reading this purport, Prabhupada is emphasizing few interesting points. First of all, he says that how the Supreme Lord is Ajana, or the Supreme Person amongst other Jananams, or all the other persons. Then in the continuation of the purport, Prabhupada uses this very famous quotation. And he uses quite frequently. Nitya nityanam chetanas chetananam. So I was thinking which way to kind of take this this Bhagavatam class today. And I kind of dive deeper into examining one specific terminology, or one specific statement. And that is chetanas chetananam. So in the translation, there are actually many translations through Srimad Bhagavatam, Chaitanya, Charitamrita, and Bhagavad Gita. Varieties of those translations are, for instance, in the Bhagavad Gita, 13th chapter, verse 6 and 7, Chaitana refers to living symptoms. In Srimad Bhagavatam, 4.17.33, it refers to intelligence. And in Srimad Bhagavatam, 4.20.12, it refers to the mind. So I found this concept very, very interesting. Like, obviously Sanskrit, we know, has varieties of variations, permutations, depends on how he's kind of connected with other Sanskrit terms. So I was thinking giving a quick kind of a presentation. So Chetana concept is a concept of consciousness. Comparison with Brahmapucham. So Brahmapucham is a very interesting concept which comes in the Bhagavad Gita in the 13th chapter, particularly in the purport by Srila Prabhupada to verse number 5. So the reason why I kind of look at this, because there are many, many similarities in these two concepts, which actually one way or another, they are kind of reflecting Brahma's purpose in this material world. When Brahma received his instruction, and we were seeking for blessings that may I be engaged in this very passionate activity, but simultaneously may I not be entangled and may I not be drawn kind of down by the modes which I'm associating with predominantly, specifically in the mode of passion. So we all know that Brahma's body is made of pure intelligence. So he was a very smart, a very intelligent individual. So he knows what he's doing. But for this particular service, which is very, very, very complex, he really needs to know what he's doing. So this Chetana concept and Brahmapucham concept is very much connected to this mantra, which somehow or another, last year, is really and quite frequently reappeared in my mind, in my meditations. And that is from subtle to gross. For those of you which we associate in Bhakti Shastri classes, I kind of present this concept quite frequently, from subtle to gross. So what does this mean, specifically from a position of Brahma? It means that Brahma has to create body according to your desires and according to your karma, according to your level of advancement and according to level of the activities that you individually sort of take on. So basically Brahma has to facilitate your desires. Is that correct? Would you say that's correct? The modern science is actually spreading this teaching that gross to subtle. First there was some physical facilitation, right? First the synapses in the brain, first the brain tissue developed, and then more and more complex levels of consciousness appeared. That's the modern science presentation. And we as a members of Gaudiya Madhava Vaishnava Sampradaya, and members of, you know, like Achyuta Gotra, our sort of presentation is from the other side, from subtle to gross. So the concept which I'm going to present is actually very simple. So I went to, for reference, I went to Jaiva Dharma of Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And as I mentioned, there are these different levels to what Chaitanya actually means. But let's keep it with consciousness, right? Let's leave the terminology Chetana with consciousness. So what Brahmaji had to do, he had to facilitate different desires of individual living entities, and then he has to sort of equal their bodies with that. Therefore, Bhaktivinoda Thakur is presenting this sort of a pyramid, starting from the bottom with something called Ajadita Chetana. So I'll give you kind of a Greek presentation. So there's this kind of a conversation in Jarva Dharma between Rajanath and one Babaji, right? And this Rajanath is asking varieties of question until it comes to a point where he's asking question: through what different stages of life do the souls imprisoned by Maya pass? And the answer is these five respective stages. So let's discuss and how this also is very much connected with the 8,400,000 species of life. So many times I have, when you're on Sankirtan, on book distribution, and when it comes to the point like, okay, how many species of life are there? Or how many bodies are there? And then when you say this very particular, very exact number, 8,400,000, people become baffled. They become almost disturbed. But all these individual bodies, they resemble the consciousness of individual jivas. Why? Because their consciousness has to be facilitated. It has to be facilitated in the cycle of repeated birth and death. So let's go through from the first stage, Acchadita Chetana, which Bhaktivinoda Thakur presented as a gradient of a budding consciousness, of sprouting or opening consciousness. Just like lotus opens when the particular, when the environment is correct, same time, the consciousness of the individual jiva opens up when the time is right. Then in the end of the presentation, Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that this gradation or this sort of a elevation and this ladder is only facilitated in these higher steps, which we're going to explain, by the mercy of the Vaishnavas. So the first initial sort of a stage is the covered consciousness. The soul who reside in the bodies of trees, grass and stones are in the stage of covered consciousness. They are close to being unconscious. Forgetting that they are servants of Krishna, they have entered deeply into the realm of matter. They have no understanding of spirit. All they know is the six changes of material life. Maybe we can do a bit of a Bhakti Shastri reminder. What are the six stages of material life? What is the first one? Birth. Second one? Growth. Third one? Maintenance. Fourth one? Excuse me? Byproducts. Fifth one? Dwindling. And sixth one is death. So these only stages are known to these souls which have covered consciousness, which are on the platform of Acchadita Chetana. Bhaktivinoda Thakur continues. This is the lowest depth to which the soul can fall. Ahalaya, the Yamala Arjuna trees, and the seven Tala trees are some examples in the Puranas give of souls in this stage of existence. Great offenses push souls into that state, and Lord Krishna's mercy delivers them. So in this lowest stage of consciousness, you don't have any conscious decisions. There's no opportunities, there are no, you have no ability to make a difference. You just literally have to either wait for the mercy of the Vaishnavas, or you just have to, you know, do your time. Just like when you're in a prison, you just have to wait for the sentence when it's finished. So a very interesting concept, or which is presented by Bhaktivinoda Thakur, is that Yamala Arjuna trees. So portion of the blessing / curse of the Yamala Arjuna trees was that Narada Muni saw them naked, and they haven't been even ashamed for the activities which they've been performing. Therefore, Narada Muni, as a pure devotee, he delivered partially a curse which sort of limited their activities, abilities, and cognition to a certain specific time frame, but simultaneously it was a great blessing. Why? Because they could actually witness or be at least present in the courtyard of Maharaj Nanda. Therefore, they could witness and be graced by the pastimes of the Supreme Lord. And later on, due to that mercy, same mercy of Narada Muni, Krishna, which is later explained by Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, that the only reason why Krishna uprooted them and gave them the blessing is because of the desire of a pure devotee like Narada Muni. So the next stage is something which we called retracted consciousness, or Sankuchita Chetana. Animals, birds, snakes, fish, other water creatures, worms, and insects are examples of the beings with retracted consciousness. The beings with covered consciousness exist on the verge of being unconscious. The beings with retracted consciousness have their consciousness a little opened. That consciousness is directed toward eating, sleeping, fearing, and bustling to and fro to fulfill a host of desires, arguing with others over property claims, and anger when someone is wronged. However, that consciousness remains unaware of the existence of a world beyond the circle of matter. Monkeys may be mischievous, may give some thought to understanding the way things work by thinking this will happen and that will not happen, may plan for the future and may show signs of gratefulness and other like feelings. Some animals have knowledge of the different properties of various objects. However, the animals do not search to find God. Therefore, their consciousness is said to be retracted. In the scriptures, it is said that the great devotee Bharata took birth as a deer, and in that condition, he was fully aware of the holy names of the Supreme Lord. However, Bharat was a special case. In general, animals do not have spiritual knowledge. Because of offenses, Bharata and Nriga became animals. But then, by the mercy of the Supreme Lord, they again attained the auspicious condition of life. So there's a very interesting section here. Bhaktivinoda Thakur is mentioning that this stage of consciousness, Sankachita Chetana, is purely for the animals. But then he connects this stage of consciousness with people which are constantly arguing, which are constantly aggressive, which are constantly desiring only some kind of immediate artificial sense enjoyment. So what does this mean? It means that we receive a great boon, a great blessing of having human birth of life. Yet, if we put ourselves in the lower consciousness, then we kind of spoil the blessings that we received. And the next stage is Mukulita Chetana, or budding consciousness. Mukulita Chetana starts with already receiving a human birth of life. Within this stage of consciousness, one can actually start realizing spirituality. One can actually start realizing that there is something more, but yet, still to a certain degree covered. So this is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur writes. Conditioned souls in human bodies display three stages of consciousness: budding consciousness, blossoming consciousness, and fully blossomed consciousness. And then Bhaktivinoda Thakur goes into describing another five types of human beings according to their God consciousness. So this is another sort of a different stage, a different differentiation. There are five kinds of human beings. So first of all, immoral people. Second type, atheists who follow moral principles. People who believe in God and follow moral principles. People engage in practical devotional service, which is Bhaktivinoda Thakur describes as sadhana bhakti. And the last one, and people engage in loving devotional service, bhava bhakti. But I would dare to present one other type of... And that is people who believe in God and are very, very immoral. We see that quite frequently outside on book distribution on our Harinam, when many times what happens that the seemingly God consciousness is just a garb or just a disguise for some unbalanced personality. And actually it's interesting because people many times take very highly moral and highly spiritual values and they hide behind them and they somehow intensify their emotions and presentation of these highly moral values. Yet by the intensification of these moral values, what they're presenting is actually unjust understanding or unequal understanding of the reality of the tattva or the philosophy they wish to sort of absorb. So these last three stages, Mukulita, Vikachita, and Purna Vikachita Chetana, respectively they resemble of personalities which are Sadhana Bhaktas, which is the Vikachita Chetana, and then Prema Bhaktas, or those devotees which are ascended or purely understood the pure Krishna consciousness, Purna Vikachita Chetana. So these are some of the interesting concepts presented here by Bhaktivinoda Thakur. And another point which I found interesting is, for those of you, everyone is more or less somehow aware of this concept. This concept presented in the Bhagavad Gita, which has a somehow similar connotation to what was presented to this point. And that is what Prabhupada calls, or what the Shastras call, Brahma Pucham. Prabhupada refers to this in the Bhagavad Gita, in the 13th chapter and verse number 5. So these stages, all of us, we very well know. Annamoy, Pranamoy, Gyanamoy, Vigyanamoy, and Anandamoy. So equally these stages are the stages of focus of individual jiva. What is the intrinsic desire of the jiva in that particular stage of consciousness? What is that what they wish to achieve, and what is that they recognize? So in the stage of Anamoy, it's purely how to seek for food, how to survive, and how to somehow maintain the status quo. In the second stage, in the stage of Pranamoy, we realize the aspect of food, and then we also recognize other living entities, that they are functioning, they are living, they are breathing, they have certain needs, certain desires, and there are certain level of interaction. On the level of Gyanamoy, we start realizing the aspects of thinking, feeling, willing. We start realizing that there's different concepts, different things to understand, different knowledge to absorb. We start reconciling varieties of contradictory concepts, and we start to engage ourselves more in more subtle matters. In the realm of Vijnanamoy, this is where the spiritual consciousness starts. On the level of Vijnanamoy, when we assimilated the gyan, when we assimilated the knowledge, applied it in practice, and now we're harvesting the results. And Anandamoy is the highest stage. The Anandamoy is a stage where we sort of fully understand our individuality in relationship with the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And there's another pyramid, and this one was created by one, I think he was Russian. There was a Russian psychologist, his name was Maslow. So Maslow also created this pyramid or hierarchy of needs, which for us to facilitate higher spiritual sentiments, the lower needs need to be facilitated. But interesting concept in Krishna consciousness, this pyramid is actually upside down. And let me tell you the reason why is it upside down. So Maslow on the bottom presents Shri Shri Radha Gokulananda ki, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman ki, Shri Shri Gornitai ki. So in Krishna consciousness, these values or this sort of a facilitation to achieve the higher values actually turns upside down. And let me explain you how, and let me explain you why. If you look, the basic needs which are required for practicing spirituality is like food, shelter, association, devotional relationships, sentiments, and some gyan, some knowledge needs to be present there. But with the devotees, when they become connected on the stage of Anandamoy, when they become purely self-realized, all these other needs, they become almost like secondary, because the full nourishment of the Anandamoy stage, which means different yogis in the past and in the history, they can go for long, long time without food. They can go for a long, long time without even breathing, without drinking water. But then this is not the goal of Krishna consciousness. The goal of Krishna consciousness is actually to facilitate the highest pinnacle of the spiritual realization and facilitate all the other necessities or all the other grades of the pyramid or hierarchy of need. Right? So for instance, food and water. You can cook prasadam and you can offer the water to Krishna. So Anandamoyin stage of self-realization penetrates this bottom platform of Annamoy. Then the Pranamoy, that we recognize that there are other living beings, other living entities. So how Krishna consciousness can penetrate this? With the level of understanding, all of us are part and parcels of the Supreme Lord, and all of us has, like, we play certain parts in the greater scheme of Varnashram system, Varnashram Dharma system. Another stage, the Gyanamoy. So how Anandamoy or Krishna consciousness can penetrate this platform, and that is by distributing, let's say, spiritual literature, by actually allowing others, allowing people to understand the true goal of Gyan, the true goal of knowledge, is to understand Krishna. One of the translations which Baladevidya Bhushan offers in his commentary in Gita Bhushana is that Jnana actually means two aspects. Jnana actually means you first of all have to select what is that goal or knowledge or the particular object that you wish to understand. And then for that, to facilitate to reach that particular object, you select particular path. So let me ask you a question. What is the goal of Jnana from a perspective of a bhakta? Does this question make sense? What is the particular path for a bhakta in which we reconcile and understand it to be Jnana? Okay, let me answer it. Maybe it was a rhetorical question. Okay, David? Can we have a mic? You can speak, I'll repeat it. Guru Sadhu Shastra. So David Prabhu is saying that Guru Sadhu Shastra is the means. So this is the interesting thing. This is what Baladevidya Bhushan says, that Jnana is that by which something is achieved. So if you wish to achieve Krishna, that path of Jnana means Shastra which is connected, or practice which is connected to Krishna. That's why different acharyas, they present always, like Prabhupada presents Jnana as bhakti. He presents Buddhi Yoga as bhakti. He presents Karma Yoga as bhakti. Why? Because all these different types of yogas are there to facilitate for bhakta bhakti. So what it means that this Brahma Pucham concept can penetrate all the different layers through the perspective of bhakti yoga. So ultimately, once recently I had a conversation with one person, and he said that, then we have a discussion about universe. We had a discussion of how this universe, according to his perspective, is imperfect. And I said, no, if you judge perfection on imperfection, you need to judge what is the particular goal of that object, and if it facilitates it correctly, right? So what is the desired outcome of material creation? Prema. Govinda Prabhu said prema. Any other thoughts? What is the desired outcome of this material creation? So all of this is connected to actually understand what is the desire. Mataji, you can pass the mic. We need to understand this point. Can we pass the mic, please? What is the desired goal for us to understand? What is the desired goal of this material creation? Right?
To realize that we're not this material element, that there's something more, because it's unsatisfying and unpalatable.
So this is the perfection of material creation. The perfection of material creation is that it's perfectly imperfect. This is a place which Brahmaji had to create, which has this balance. Create something which is perfectly imperfect. So the reason why we try to present these two particular points about Brahma Pucham and Chetana concept and Brahmapucham is to understand that all these different stages, all these different gradients are there to fully facilitate your desire to leave. Material world is created for you never to be satisfied. That's the goal of material creation. Right? So we need to understand that when truly Brahma was asking for blessings, this is what he was asking for. He said, please allow me to create something which is so unique, so complex, that yet it facilitates all your desires to such a degree that you will never be satisfied. That's far out. That's a far out concept. So this is what it means. So when we are here in this material creation, we should understand that it's another place to be happy, satisfied, or fully facilitated. And why? And this is what it brings another concept to play. Or so if this material creation is perfectly imperfect, that means your desires as a living entity, as a jiva, is outside of the box. Basically, you think outside of the box. Why? Because you desire something outside of this material creation. Therefore, you have experiences or you have propensity which equals outside of the box, which in itself indicates that you don't belong in this box or in this, as it said, it's an egg shape type of universe. So you don't belong here. So Brahma was asking for blessings to create something which constantly reminds the living entities that they don't belong here. And that's a devotional service on its own. Right? Brahma may be in the mode of passion. Brahma may be a personality which is very high up there in the hierarchy. Brahma may be, but same time he is a pure devotee who's got big service to do. Just like different personalities have managerial positions. Different devotees have different, you know, services they have to perform. And sometimes these services, they force you to deal with modes of material nature. Right? Passion. Ignorance. You're lucky if you have service which is purely in the mode of goodness. Like pujari services. Hare Krishna. For those of you who do pujari services, I can tell you there's a bit of chaos sometimes happening behind the curtains. Just before 7 a.m. So, Hare Krishna. It's quite an intimate information to share, but it is reality. So this was the position of Brahma. So that's why when Chatushloki was revealed to Brahmaji, that was all that was required for him to receive the benediction and blessings and further continue. And another last point which I wanted to kind of present is that there's very great, at least from what I read, when the Supreme Lord instructed Brahma, he disappeared. So the message was delivered, it was absorbed, it was accepted. Now the Lord doesn't need to be not physically or transcendentally or at least visibly present in front of the Lord. So I was thinking about this recently. I'm going to open my heart a bit. As you know, His Holiness Kadamba Kanana Maharaj, he left recently. And when the time comes, for those of you who are initiated or have initiation or planning to get initiation, the time will come when you will witness the departure of your spiritual master. You will witness where a person who was nourishing you, presenting you with philosophy, and making sure that you practice correctly, he will physically depart. Just like in this section is said, in his transcendental form, instructing Brahmaji, the leader of all living entities, disappeared. So the question is now, you received the tattva, you received the shiksha, you received the blessings, you received the chatushloki, you receive everything that you need for you to engage yourself in devotional activities. The question is, what are you going to do now? Are you going to be miserable for the fact that the Supreme Lord disappeared from your vision? Or are you going to honor the instructions which you received from the Supreme Lord and engage yourself in activity which was desired and ultimately meant for you to perform as an activity of service? So one thing which I took from this is that importance of Guru Parampara, and instruction and association are non-different. When you're following the instructions of a spiritual master, it was said thousands of times, you know, again, you said it almost in every class, Bapu, Vani, all of you, all of us, we know these concepts. But the time you will be tested, all of us will be tested when this activity, when this thing actually happens and occurs in your life. When it happens in your life, you will be tested by the heaviness of seeming distance and honoring what came to you in the form of shiksha. So that was these two concepts which I wanted to present. One of them was the burden of love, or the burden of devotion, or the burden of creation which Brahma received from the Supreme Lord, and how he carried that on, and how this Brahma Pucham and the Chaitanya concept of elevation of consciousness was encapsulated within the creation of Brahmaji. And the second point, or the second half of the paragraph which Prabhupada presented, is that Brahma was ready to create when the Lord disappeared, because he carried the instruction within his heart. He got the blessings, he got the boons, he got the instructions. So the stage was ready, the activity had to be performed. So I will finish there. If there are any points, any questions, devotees wish to raise complaints. Hare Krishna, Samara Hare Prabhu.
Hare Krishna, thank you for the nice class and taking the time to make the presentations and things. I was just wondering about these Chaitanya and Brahma Pucham concepts, and what's the vision of a devotee on these, like, in terms of practical application, like, how do we just use it as a way to categorize people, or, like, how does a devotee apply this in their lives in terms of understanding this knowledge and actually, like, what's, just trying to figure out what's the application, if that makes sense.
Mm-hmm. It's the same thing like, for instance, Kanishta, Madhyama, and Uttama. So, for instance, when Prabhupada was presenting in Nectar of Instruction and Nectar of Devotion and Sri Isha Upanishad, and when he's presenting these concepts, then he always give it practical how these individual personalities conduct themselves, what is the level of their adhikar, what is the level of their interactions with devotees, with karmis, with atheists, and so on. What are their tastes? So, first of all, we can sort of appreciate the creation of the Lord and the how the consciousness is connected with modes of material nature. And as Bhaktivinoda Thakur refers, that all of us, we try to achieve this Purna Vikachita Chaitana, which is that stage of pure realization that we are servants of the Lord, and pure realization that this is Krishna. And that just like as a flower has a certain stages of opening itself, and there are also different factors involved when the flower can start budding. You know, there needs to be enough of sunshine, there needs to be water, there needs to be even a particular environment. So for us, this resembles the budding or the opening of a Vaishnava. That there needs to be certain environmental factors involved for a consciousness to fully blossom, which means association of devotees, correct sadhana, practical application, process to follow, and certain tapasya to perform. So we are individuals, we have individual psychophysical natures, but for them to fully blossom and fully to be nourished, there needs to be certain particular environment. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur and the Shastras respectively present these concepts for us to understand how to actually perform our sadhana according to our current stage of consciousness. That would be my answer.
Thank you. I guess so then it's like a more of a self introspection, reflection kind of.
Srinivas Prabhu has a point.
Bhaktivinoda Thakur explains in Bhakti Aloka that there's karma, karma, jnana, and bhakti. So, knowledge you cultivate, and once you get the higher taste, you have to take shelter of the higher taste. Mm. But if you don't take shelter of the higher taste, you fall back down again. Mm. But like you said in your class, you have to go for that Anandamaya. You have to go for that. Once you get that taste, you go by that, then advancement becomes easy.
Yes, thank you. Any other points, questions, Paramakaruna Prabhu?
The six changes that the body goes through, is it because of the living entity within the body, or everything around us also goes through the six changes? Because sometimes Prabhupada says, seems like he's referring to everything goes through six changes, and sometimes he's referring to just the body going through six changes. So just wanted to know your thoughts.
I think in this particular situation, I believe Bhaktivinoda Thakur referred to the whole material creation goes through these six changes. Or at least there are these, obviously we both agree that these six changes are only connected to the body. And if the jiva is embodied, then naturally it has certain propensities which are somehow mechanically connected with the body, in a sense that the material, the soul provides the energy, the chetana, the consciousness to the dead matter, which then facilitates these six changes. So the human beings and all the respective 8,400,000 species of life, they're going through these six changes.
I was more referring to the objects that we see around us. Do they go through six changes?
If the jiva is entered, those objects, if they are living beings, animals, plants, varieties of different types of creatures, in the spectrum of 8,400,000, then yes. But if it's like mountains or something which is doesn't possess consciousness, then I believe not. But I can be, please, you know, correct me. David Prabhu?
Prabhu, thank you for the class. I'm wondering if you could please explain the two aspects of jnana that you mentioned. If you can repeat them. Or
jnana and vijnan?
You said there's two aspects to jnana.
Two aspects to jnana. Have I said that? Okay. Do you have any notes on that? No? Oh yeah, you mean the one from Balada Vidya Bhushan? Oh yeah, okay. So jnana, there is the object of jnana, and then this process how to achieve that object of jnana. So let's say if you want to be an engineer or something, electrical engineer, then your object of your knowledge is, let's say, to receive a title or a degree. And the process by how you achieve it is the particular books you have to study to achieve that title. So the goal of jnana, ultimately, just like Krishna says, Vedans sarva sacham hridisani vishto mata smritin jnanam apohanam cha vedascha sarvam aham eva vedo vedanta krit veda vid eva chaham. Krishna says the goal and the conclusion of all the knowledge and wisdom is to attain him. But different individuals, they put different grades upon the spectrum of knowledge. They want to achieve higher planetary systems, they want to achieve mystical siddhis, they wanted to just be vipras, and they want to be very learned scholars, brahmanas in varieties of fields. So if they create a goal they wish to achieve, then there is the path to achieve that. So Balada Vidya Bhushan elaborates and explains that for bhaktas, the goal of jnana is to understand Krishna and develop, and the path towards him is actually bhakti. And this jnana, these bhakti shastras are, you know, in that spectrum of jnana, which will help us on the path towards Krishna. Phew, that was a tough one, David. Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I was just wondering, in the purport, Prabhupada says that when there is that the impersonal feature does not exist in the spiritual world, mm-hmm. like it does in the material, that because of chetana, that constitutes personality, or how does that work? I mean, this is probably very esoteric, but if you have any opinions.
As there are impersonal features in the material world, What comes in the first in top of my head is that impersonal features in the material world. I would say two angles. One of them is maybe even the consciousness of covered individual jivas, which have this impersonal consciousness. They may have or may not. Or that there are certain impersonal objects which are not, which don't have a jiva inside. So they are not real personalities. And everything in the spiritual world is a person, just like Prabhupada refers. River, man, animal, bird, everything is a living entity. And in the material world, not everything is a living entity. Some of them is prakriti. And not even the body is, for instance, a living entity. The body is just dead matter, which only is alive if it's entered by the living entity. So even the body may be considered to be impersonal, only if it has a person inside. But it's a very interesting question. I don't have an answer. Maybe devotees would like to share some insights. Yes, Prabhu?
Really good class. Does that mean that if you exist in the transcendental world, you have to be very pure of thought, mind, and everything else, whereas in the material world, you can be impersonal but still have some of those qualities because people are deceived, or you can deceive people?
As we were presenting in this class, all these are coverings of the consciousness. The consciousness is pure, and in the spiritual world, they're fully pure, which means you can be a tree, you can be a blade of grass, you can be a flower or whatever, but you're pure consciousness. There's no contamination. Otherwise, what you're doing in the spiritual world if your consciousness is contaminated? In the material world, because of this initial desire of the jiva to lord over material nature and to be sort of detached from the Supreme Lord, for you to actually facilitate this desire, you need ahankar, which basically is false ego. So you need to have a false ego to enter material realm and seemingly enjoy. So there is no place for impersonal features in the transcendental world. That's quite clear, as there are impersonal features in the material world. Yeah. Then Prabhupada continues, whenever there is a chetana or knowledge, the personal feature comes in. In the spiritual world, everything is full of knowledge. So whenever there is chetana or knowledge, the personal feature comes in. So what these two sentences might sort of refer to is that whenever there is soul or individual living entity entering material realm, that means that pure, that consciousness enters the impersonal prakriti, which is just matter. And as matter has no personality, it's just object. It's made of five elements. So only when the chetana, the consciousness, enters, then it's considered to be living. Anyway, Hare Krishna. I will dwell on it. Hare Krishna. Granta Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Nitya Gaura Premanande, Hare Bol.